Don't touch that dial. Stay a while and listen to the great things that God is doing in the world today.
What people prayed for in the past and didn't see happen, you can see happen. What people prophesied in the past but didn't have happen, you can have happen in your life. What people believed God for in the past but didn't have it happen, you can have in your life.
And here's your host, Jim Rome.
Bob Haslam. Hi, Bob. It's so great to have you. You're a real blessing today.
Amen. God's just breaking off a spirit of intimidation that's trying to hold people back from what God's called them to do. And I believe that this is a time where God's looking for people who will boldly grab hold of things.
We are in a historic moment right now because the Jesus People movement of the 60s and 70s, most people say it started around 1966. That was exactly 28 years before Toronto. There was 28 years from the Jesus People movement to the Toronto Brownsville revival. How many people were touched by the Toronto Brownsville revival? Do you know that we are exactly 28 years from Toronto right now? Are you ready for a reformation? I was riding my Harley on Sunday after I did a service in South Africa. I was riding my Harley because that's what Jesus would have rode if they had him instead of a donkey. And I was coming around a little corner. I don't remember what happened. I would say it wasn't user error. I'm sure it wasn't. It's probably the devil. But I woke up in the hospital 3 hours later, and I didn't know how I got there. And apparently I had an accident on my motorcycle, and I didn't remember anything. I still don't remember anything about the accident. The first thing I remember is hearing a voice behind me, and it wasn't the Lord saying, "This is the way, walk ye in it." It was the nurse saying, "Sir, sir, where are you from? What country are you from?" And I said, "I'm from here. Why?" She said, "Because you've been talking out loud in a language I've never heard before." Now, if you know me, you know I'm a bridge builder. I'm not like I train people to do evangelism, like prophetic in the marketplace. And so I'm usually the guy that builds the bridge. But I think I had so much pain medication in me already that I just went and said, "Well, that's my heavenly prayer language. I'm a Christian." And that was the response in the emergency room. It was complete silence, very awkward. Nobody had a comeback for that. And so wasn't really good evangelism. But 2 hours later, they put me up in my recovery room on the 7th floor. And the nurse came in to take my information, the floor nurse. And she said, "I'm your floor nurse. I'll be taking care of you tonight. And I need to get some information." She starts typing in. And I heard her accent. It was like a Latina accent. And I said to her, "Your voice sounds familiar. Are you the nurse that was downstairs in the trauma room?" And she said, kind of embarrassed, like, "Yes, sir, that was me." And I said, "Are you the one who asked me if I was from another country?" And she didn't answer the question. She said, "Sir, sometimes people say strange things when they're on medication." That's what she said to me. And I said, "Well, I say strange things if I don't have medication, so that's normal." And I said, "No, I said, I want to tell you, I'm a follower of Jesus, and he likes to talk to me about people." She said, "That's good, sir." And I don't know if it was the medication, but I got some really good words for her. So I'm not advocating supplementing your evangelism with stimulants. However, I will say it got good. So I said, "You know, God's telling me that you have an 8-year-old daughter. Do you have an 8-year-old daughter?" She said, "Yes, sir. This is strange, but yes, I do." I said, "And she loves to draw cartoon pictures, cartoon characters. She's an artist." She said, "Sir, this is so strange, but yes, that's true." I said, "But what Jesus really wants me to tell you is that she's also a musician, and she used to take piano lessons, and she stopped taking piano lessons because her teacher was very hard on her. But her greatest joy is to sing and play, and it's Jesus' greatest joy to hear her sing and play." And my nurse began to cry, and she said, "Sir, who are you?" And since I had a concussion, I didn't remember who I was, but I told her, I said, I don't know. Right now I can't, I don't remember. But I want to tell you about Jesus. That's who's here to meet you. And with a concussion and 5 broken ribs and a pierced lung, I led my nurse to Jesus in the hospital room. Now, I want to give a little bit of credit to the pain meds because I think it did help me. But I want to give the most credit to the fact that Jesus knew that I was going to have a moment of emptiness. And he prompted me to fill an empty space in my house with prayer. Because what you put inside of you will determine what comes out of you when the pressure comes on. Amen? And I believe that God is getting us ready. Say, he's getting me ready. He's been getting us ready for something. Maybe ready for persecution. But can I tell you something? I think he's getting us ready for reformation. I think he's getting us ready for the greatest move of God. And this is not just preacher talk, pastor talk, prophet talk. I'm going to tell you that we are in a historic moment right now because the Jesus People movement of the 60s and the 70s, most people say it started around 1966. That was exactly 28 years before Toronto. There was 28 years from the Jesus People movement to the Toronto Brownsville revival. How many people were touched by the Toronto Brownsville revival? Do you know that we are exactly 28 years from Toronto right now? Are you ready for a reformation? See, I believe. Do you know that in Matthew, he gives an incredible genealogy of Jesus. And genealogies seem very boring, but Matthew doesn't do anything by accident as he's writing his Bible. It's very, very intentional. At the end of the genealogy of Jesus, he writes this, and there were 14 generations from Abraham until David when the ark came into Jerusalem. There were 14 generations from David to the exile where the ark was taken away. And there were 14 generations from the exile to Jesus when you became the ark, when the veil was torn in two. I have a lot of friends who believe that because America is a Christian nation, that God has a special covenant with America, and I'm not going to argue about that. I have other friends who believe God doesn't act and speak and work specifically with specific nation states anymore, and I'm not going to argue that. But I want to tell you that 400 years ago, November of last year, 400 years ago, was the first time the gospel hit the shores of North America when a group of pilgrims came over and wrote something called the Mayflower Compact, which was a prayer that God would use them to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. 400 years ago, divided by 14 generations, is 28 years. I believe we are at the convergence of cycles of sin in the world and cycles of redemption in the world. And I'm saying the kingdom is about to break in. Are you ready for a reformation? I want to give you a little perspective of how I feel this looks. And the last 20 years, we have been in a period of revivalism. Not just a revival, but revivalism. And I remember because I was a young pastor, I was a denominational pastor. I grew up Wesleyan Methodist. I became Word of Faith, and then I became Classical Pentecostal. I was ordained with a Pentecostal denomination, and that's where I experienced revival. And I honor all those roots because I believe when God does a new thing, he's not burning down the old, he's rebuilding the old. You know, in the Old Testament, in Isaiah 42 and Isaiah 43, it says it both times, see, I'm doing a new thing. Say, he's doing a new thing. But the word new there is renewed, rebuilt, restored thing. And so God's not burning down the old thing. He's rebuilding, renewing, restoring the old thing. It's called a reformation. And so what God did the last 20 years is he merged, and these are prophetic words. I heard John Ball Jackson say it. I remember Bob Jones saying it in the late 90s, that God is merging the prophetic gift with the evangelistic gift to create a tool for the harvest. I remember hearing that saying, that is crazy. That will never happen because prophets are quirky introverts. 3 fingers pointing back at me. And evangelists are scary extroverts. all fingers pointing at Todd White out there. All right, just so you know. Those of you who know Todd and I are friends, we did a thing called Power Schools of Power and Love for 7 years together. And to see God take the evangelistic gift and the prophetic gift, merge it into, and there are thousands of revivalists. Thousands of revivalists that have been trained up. Can I tell you what I believe the next 20 years looks like? I believe God's creating a new hybrid between the pastoral gift, the shepherding gift, which God is breathing on in a new way, and the apostolic gift, which is a culture building gift. I mean, if you listen to the word given to Sean and Crystal last night, that's an apostolic building gift, building community. And I believe that we are going to, the next revival doesn't just look like revivalists, it looks like revival communities. It looks like revival centers. It looks like revival cities. It looks like revival culture. It looks like revival as a lifestyle. And so I believe God's going to breathe on the local church again. The thing that Jesus died for, and I want to share some things about that. But in that, I believe God's still doing evangelism, but I believe that God is merging evangelism with the discipleship. And so I like to say discipleship's the new evangelism. I'm not looking, I want to raise up not just disciples, I want to raise up disciplers. I don't just want to get the fish, I want to get the fishermen. And so I want to take you on a little journey of how a transition I believe Jesus went through that can help us. And I want us to look at Matthew chapter 12 and chapter 13. And I want to start with a dream that I had several years ago, Matthew chapter 12, verse 46, and we're going to go through Matthew 13, verse 3. And when Matthew wrote this, he did not write this with chapter breaks in it. And so there's no chapter breaks, and I'm going to read it like there's no chapter break because it's all the same story. I had a dream in the early 2000s, and I went into a restaurant, and I went to the counter, and I said, I want my order to go. And the young lady at the counter pointed over to a pub table and she said, you need to go wait over there. And over at this little pub table was a father and a son and they were sitting together and I sat next to the son. The son looked at me and he pointed at me and he said, you need to understand Matthew 13. It's about the kingdom. I woke up from the dream and I'm like, I don't know what did I eat last night. I mean, I should have probably taken my order to go. And I realized what the dream was telling me, and that is the church has been waiting for the orders to go into the world because Jesus said that you will go and you will make disciples of all nations. He said you will go and be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the othermost parts of the world. And he called his disciples apostles, which are called sent ones, ones who go. And there's an interesting story in the book of Acts where the disciples stayed in Jerusalem and they built a church in Jerusalem. And for 40 years, they were in Jerusalem building the church and they didn't go. The sent ones didn't go. The sent ones stayed. The sent ones stayed where they were until something happened. Persecution. And when persecution came to the church of Jerusalem, it says in the book of Acts, and Luke is being funny when he's writing it. He said, and persecution broke out in the church, and all the church was scattered throughout Judea. And they were scattered in Samaria. And the church all went, except for the apostles. They stayed in Jerusalem. Luke is being funny. He's saying the whole church went except those who were sent. I love revival. I love conferences. But if a conference makes you stay, if a conference doesn't teach you to go, then you might need something to get you up out of the seat. Jesus has a moment, and I'm going to explain to you where I believe we are and what's motivating us right now. Let's look at Matthew chapter 12, verse 46. While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you. He replied to him, who is my mother? Who are my brothers? I always want to say this sort of with a Northeast accent. Pointing to his disciples. This is a strange statement. Here are my mother, my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. And that same day, Jesus went out of the house, sat down by a lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. And he told them many things in parables. Before Matthew chapter 13, Jesus was ministering primarily in the synagogue and in houses. In the synagogue, he would read from the scroll, and in his first sermon, they had a reaction just slightly better than my first sermon. They tried to throw him off a cliff. In the synagogue, spiritual skeptics sat there and folded their arms and said, "Isn't this Joseph's son, the carpenter? Isn't this guy from Nazareth? Nothing good comes from Nazareth." And in the synagogue, he kept going to these spiritual skeptics, trying to open their eyes to see and their ears to hear. In the house, he would gather spiritual spectators. These are people who peered into the windows to see a miracle, people who ripped the ceiling off to make a miracle. These were people who wanted to see Jesus do another trick. They were believers, but they believed in what he did. That's why Jesus said, it says in the book of John, it says in Jerusalem, Jesus did not give himself to all people because he knew their hearts. It was because they put their belief in him because what he was doing. And Jesus gathered in houses spiritual spectators. I would submit to you that most of the church fits into one of those two categories. Either spiritual skeptics folding their arms saying, "I'm not sure what I believe," or spiritual spectators with their hands out saying, "I want more." And that's a good position to be in. But can I tell you something? Jesus demonstrates another way, and that is getting out of the house and into the boat. Now, I'm not advocating anything negative about what we've been doing as a church, because I don't believe the kingdom is either or. I think it's both and. I think we have to go, and I'll prove that to you at the end of this message. I think we have to come in order to go. We have to be with him in order to be sent. We have to come in order to go. And so I'm not advocating anything wrong with the church. I'm just saying I think there's a moment of invitation for reformation, and I don't want to miss it myself, and I'd like for you not to miss it. So there's three things that happens here, and I want to point out a few things to you. First of all, Jesus shifts his ministry after this moment, after Matthew 13, he does not go back to the synagogues and houses. He goes to the masses. Such large crowds gathered when he got into a boat. Such large crowds gathered. Such large crowds gathered. I love Matthew's language there. He doesn't even define the number, because the harvest that's about to come cannot be defined. It's harvest time. How big of a harvest? Such big harvest. Such large harvest. Such large crowds, right? And so Matthew is saying that the exponential growth of Jesus' ministry happened after a few things that happened to him. A few things happened around him. And after Matthew 13, Jesus went and sat in the mountains and taught the Beatitudes. He went out to the Sea of Galilee and crowds gathered. He went to the valleys and he fed the 5,000. His miracles were done among the masses. So God gave him a new method, and God gave him a new message. He taught in parables, and God gave him new masses. And here's what I want to tell you. God wants to give you a new method. He wants to give you a new message. He wants to give you the masses. But you first have to get out of the house. I'm not saying leave your church. I'm saying take it with you. Jesus left the house, but he didn't leave the family. I'm not telling you you need to leave. I didn't leave the Methodist church, the Wesleyan Methodist church. I'm bringing it with me into my new season. I didn't leave the Word of Faith. Oh, no, I didn't leave the Word of Faith. I got the whole faith library. I got Papa Hagen. I got Kenneth Copeland takes. I spent so many hours in high school in my room listening to Kenneth Copeland that I got in trouble. My dad knocked on my door and said, "Son, I'm concerned. You're in your room so much. What are you doing?" Teenage boy alone in his room. I'm like, "Dad, I'm listening to Kenneth Copeland." He's like, "Don't you want to get a girlfriend?" I said, Dad, I have faith. God's going to give me a hot wife. If I build up faith, the more I listen to Copeland, I have faith for a wife. And look what, I have big faith. So Jesus is about to make a shift. Someone say shift. God's about to shift the church. Jesus is in the house, and someone comes to him and says, your mother and your brothers are standing outside. Where are they? Outside. You can't get into the next season. No more normal. I don't want a new normal. I don't want to be normal. I don't want to talk about normal because nothing's normal. And I don't want normal. I want the new. Forget about normal, because normal means that people, when we say we want a new normal, it means we want to rely on something. We want to know what's going to happen. We want to know that 1 + 1 = 2. We want a new constant. That's what we want. We want a new constant. I want to know when I get in my car, I turn on the key and it starts up. I want to know when I drive to Starbucks that my red eye is going to be there like it was this morning. Thank you, Jesus, for Starbucks app. I'm just saying my red eye was there. Actually, it was a double red eye, 2 shots of espresso in a bold coffee. They call that a black eye, actually. It's punching you in both eyes. I'm going to tell you this. The new is not going to be a constant. The new is going to be a journey. The new is going to be a discovery. The new is going to be a walk into the place that he has prepared for us. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. For in my Father's house there are many rooms, and I'm going to prepare a place for you. Where are you going? Ah, it's the Father's house. How do we get there? I'm the way. What is he saying? I'm already in your new. Just stay with me and you'll get there. And when you get there, I will be there too. And so Jesus has this experience where an announcer comes to him and says, your mother and brother outside, they want to speak to you. Can I tell you something? The voice of your past wants to speak to you. The voice of the orphan spirit wants to speak to you. The voice of your last season wants to speak to you. The voice of your motorcycle accident wants to speak to you. The voice of abuse wants to speak to you. The voice of accusation wants to speak to you. The voice of intimidation wants to speak to you. I don't have time for it anymore. I don't have time to prophesy out of a spirit of intimidation, which is the spirit of this world, because Beelzebub can't cast out Beelzebub. So I'm not going to have a spirit of intimidation or an accusation come through my prophetic utterance, because I don't have time for the voice of the past to shape my future. I'm going to have a spirit of power. I'm going to have a spirit of love. I'm going to have a sound mind. And I'm not going to have a spirit of intimidation. And I won't let it infiltrate my prophetic utterance. I am going to believe in what the blood of the Lamb says. I'm going to believe in the word of the testimony out of my mouth. And I'm going to lay my life down unto death. And the spirit of accusation will fall in my life and in my nation, because I'm not going to partner with a spirit of accusation. Okay, getting up in your business. The reason that Jesus didn't respond to the voice of his mother and his brother was because his mother was there, because Joseph had died. Jesus had expectations that as the oldest son, he would run the family business. The brothers are there to help him fulfill his role as the oldest brother. He had to run the family. He had to take care of his mother. Can I tell you something? If you go into your next season, you're going to disappoint some people's expectations. But if you're going to get out of the house, you can't let disappointment define your destiny. That's number one. You can't let I'm not going to let disappointment define my destiny. I'm not going to let 50 meetings shut down in 2020, a loss of my brother-in-law in April to COVID, a motorcycle accident, a surgery, and then, yes, thank God, 6 weeks after surgery, COVID. I'm not going to let the voice of the past, I'm not going to let disappointment, canceled meetings, hopes deferred, I'm not going to let them define my destiny. And I'm sure not. And Jesus was respectful. He did not address his mother. He did not disrespect his mother. And I want to tell you why I think this story is here. Jesus didn't even address the announcer. He said, who's my mother? Amen. Which means I understand that the last season, that there's people in it that can't see me in my next season, but I'm not going to let their disappointment with me define my destiny. Who's my mother? Why did he say who's my mother? You read through the Bible, mothers are representations of systems or the church. The writer in Galatians, Paul says, Hagar was our mother, Mount Sinai is our mother, Sarah is now our mother, and then Jerusalem is our mother. What is he describing? He's describing systems. And Mary eventually does become a symbol of the mother of the church at the cross. Jesus says, these are my mother, these are my brothers, this is my new family, who the ones who do the will of my Father, which is heaven. This is identity. He's identifying himself with the Father, but he's not just talking about identity here. He's actually, and this is what we're moving into, your orders to go. You've learned for the last 20 years. Why did I sit at that pub table in that dream next to a father and a son? Because God needed to teach the church identity. He needed to teach the church sonship, daughterhood. Why? So that we could step into inheritance, so that we could get Jesus his inheritance, and that is transformation of cities. And so what Jesus was saying is, I know who my daddy is. And the ones who will be, the ones who will be my family, the ones who are my mother, the ones who will birth what God is doing on the earth, the ones who will birth the move of God, the ones that will bring about the sons and daughters of God, because creation is crying in eager expectation for the manifestation of the sons of God. Who's your mother? The ones who do the will of your Father in heaven. And I love this word will here, because this word will, there's two words for will that's used in the New Testament. One means a will based upon fact or conviction. It's a good word. It's a good thing that there's sometimes we have to grit our teeth and do God's will. Sometimes we have to do what Jesus did. Father, not my will, but your will be done. We had to exchange our will to his will. But this is another word. It's the word thelema. This word will is a desire and a purpose born out of passion. There's emotion attached to it. And what he is saying here is, my new family, the new move of God on the earth, are the ones who know what makes God's heart sing. The ones who know how to move God's heart. The ones who know the will of the Father. Do you know? God doesn't want you just to do his will. He wants you to discover what makes his heart sing about you. When we say God's got a will for your life, a plan for your life, a purpose for your life, we're not saying obey it. We're saying you get to do it. It makes the Father sing and dance when you discover his will. I think the Father was dancing while I was on my hospital bed. I think the Father was singing while I was on my hospital bed. Why? Because I was doing the will of my Father. I was doing what makes his heart sing about me. I was allowing him to sing through me when I didn't have a voice. I was allowing him to speak through me when I didn't have a brain. I was allowing him to walk through me when I couldn't walk. And I want to tell you, it gives new meaning to his strength is made perfect in your weakness. So I'm not going to have a spirit of intimidation or an accusation come through my prophetic utterance, because I don't have time for the voice of the past to shape my future.
Oh, thank you,
is here to bring God's love, help, and power into your life. Come fly with Global Air Force.